Hello and welcome, everyone. My name is Nancy Porter, and I'm bringing you another reading from The Week magazine, which is a periodical which publishes condensed versions of news articles from global sources. I need to remind you, you are listening to a recording provided for the use of the blind and print impaired. Items read on AirzLA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. I'm Nancy Porter, and we've gotten a little bit behind. The Week really does come out once a week, and it is very chock full of interesting stuff. So we tend to get a little bit behind sometimes. I'm still liking to finish up from the October 17th, 2025 issue, because some of the articles I will be sharing with you are still very topical. All right, let's move to page 16 in the news section. The heading is Talking Points. Headline, Venezuela. Does Trump want war? Is President Trump planning to overthrow Venezuela's regime? Asked Edward Luce in the publication Financial Times. So far, he seemed content to blow up alleged Venezuelan smuggling boats in the Caribbean, destroying four vessels in a matter of weeks and killing more than 20 people. But the deployment of three U.S. destroyers, a nuclear-powered attack submarine, a squadron of F-35s, and a marine expeditionary unit suggests that something much bigger than a drug seizure operation is afoot. Back in the United States, Trump recently squashed his special envoy Richard Grenell's efforts to negotiate with President Nicolas Maduro, the thuggish kleptocrat Trump accuses with little evidence of being a drug cartel boss and of waging a narco-terrorism campaign against the United States. Calling off those diplomatic overtures trips the scales toward the hawks in his administration, such as Secretary of State Marco Rubio and White House advisor Stephen Miller, who are gunning for regime change. The average American knows vanishingly little about what its government seeks to accomplish in this fight, said W.J. Hennigan in the New York Times newspaper. Trump administration officials recently told Congress that Trump has determined the United States is in a non-international armed conflict with non-state drug smuggling groups. But they didn't say which specific groups they are seeking to destroy or what legal authorities they are acting on. That's because there are no legal grounds, said Andrew C. McCarthy in the publication National Review. By invoking non-state actors, Trump is making a specious analogy to America's war on Al-Qaeda. But that post-9/11 conflict was approved by Congress. While Trump is claiming unilateral war power and drug trafficking is not an act of terrorism under federal law, it's a felony punishable by imprisonment, not a drone strike. So what is Trump actually after here? Asked Jude Russo in the publication called The American Conservative. The idea that this military operation is about drugs is pure propaganda, because Venezuela does not play an outsized role in the drug trade. And while Venezuela has the world's largest oil reserves, the U.S. has other easier sources for hydrocarbons. The most plausible reason, then, is that Trump is squaring up to Maduro because he can. For all his peace rhetoric, Trump enjoys displays of American hard power. And Venezuela, a failing socialist state that nobody especially likes, is an easy target for a splendid little war. Perhaps Trump's instinct is right, and an attempt to topple the Maduro regime won't devolve into a guerrilla war that sparks regional chaos and mass migration. But is that a gamble you would like to make? Next article, headline, Supreme Court judging 20 years of Roberts. John Roberts has now spent two decades dismantling American democracy, said David Ferris in Newsweek. Sworn in as the Supreme Court's Chief Justice in fall of 2005, the George W. Bush appointee pledged to be a neutral umpire who calls balls and strikes. Instead, the conservative-dominated Roberts Court has systematically aggrandized its own power and that of the Republican Party. It dismantled campaign finance laws with 2010's Citizens United, opening a path for billionaires to buy power. Gutted the Voting Rights Act with 2013's Shelby County, and rolled back women's rights by overturning Roe v. Wade in 2022. But perhaps the gravest blow to American democracy was delivered in 2024, when the court ruled, in an opinion written by Roberts himself, that presidents enjoy presumptive immunity for almost all their official acts. The ruling ended multiple prosecutions of Donald Trump and gave him a green light to engage in virtually unlimited corruption and lawbreaking when he returned to office in January. This nightmare situation is Roberts' doing. For conservatives, Roberts' tenure has been a triumph, said the Wall Street Journal in an editorial. His court has issued strong and significant rulings defending the First Amendment, including that religious business owners cannot be forced by Obamacare to cover what they view as abortion medications, and reasserted the right to bear arms. Yet there is no clear judicial philosophy linking Roberts' decisions, said Robert Root in the publication titled Reason. He's sometimes restrained presidential overreach, blocking President Joe Biden from forgiving student loans and President Trump from ending a program that shields young migrants from deportation, and sometimes enabled it. There's no telling which version of the Chief Justice will emerge in the new court term that just began. This term will be the Roberts Court's most consequential yet, said Noah Feldman in the publication called Bloomberg. It will decide whether Trump can seize tariff powers from Congress, fire Federal Reserve governors at will, and erase birthright citizenship from the Constitution. Don't expect Roberts to rein in the wannabe authoritarian, said Jackie Calmes in the Los Angeles Times. A court that recently empowered federal agents to racially profile and detain anyone they suspect of being in the United States illegal, the Fourth Amendment be damned, is not one that will defy Trump. Not since the pro-slavery Taney Court before the Civil War has the Supreme Court been so wrong for its moment in history. The next article in the Talking Points section, headline, Hegseth, Making Soldiers Manly Again. Pete Hegseth may be a wildly unqualified as Secretary of Defense, said Nick Carogio in the publication titled Dispatch, but he has nailed the art of performance machismo. In a recent speech to the 800 or so generals, admirals, and other high-ranking officials he summoned to Quantico, Hegseth, who now insists on being called the Secretary of War, stood in front of a giant U.S. flag and performed Patron for Dummies before a collection of actual tough guys with far more military and policy experience than him. The former National Guard major and Fox News personality strode around the stage like an actor, lecturing them that soldiers should not be fat, should not wear dresses, and should not worry about climate change. The United States lost warrior ethos, he claimed, can be regained only by ousting beardos and women who can't meet the male standard of combat readiness. As the leaders listened in glum silence, Hegseth's exercise in overcompensation proved that he leads the Pentagon only because the president cannot distinguish right-wing television from reality. Soon after commanding officers flew back to their posts, the questions began, said Mark Hertling in the publication titled The Bulwark. Female soldiers were forced to ponder their dwelling opportunities for advancement. The many black soldiers who get painful ingrown hairs if they shave closely risk losing their careers. And so do observant Sikh, Muslim, and Orthodox Jewish soldiers with beards. Despite Hegseth's self-righteous bravado, said Kathleen Parker in the Washington Post, his focus on the erosion of standards exposes some uncomfortable truths about including women in combat roles. On average, men have at least 40% to 45% more upper body mass than most women, whose bodies generally are not constructed to carry 60 120-pound rucksacks, much less a 150-pound wounded comrade. Combat readiness truly is a concern, said Joe Sestak in the Philadelphia Inquirer, but it's no longer a matter of push-ups and pull-ups. Much of modern warfare is now electronic, from drones to aircraft to communication systems, and America lags far behind China's advances in cyber warfare, space weapons, and telecommunications. Beijing could just flip a switch to ensure our digital systems will be rendered completely useless. Yet Hegseth just signed a memo to restore mission focus by cutting back on cybersecurity training. If Hegseth wants more combat readiness for the next war, he is looking for it in all the wrong places. Moving now to the news section on technology on page 20, let's look at what's new in tech. Headline: electric bills soar near data centers. As the artificial intelligence boom intensifies, the proliferation of energy-hungry data centers is sending electricity bills to record highs in much of the U.S., pulling everyday households into paying for the digital economy, says Josh Saul in the publication Bloomberg. A recent analysis of power prices in communities across the country found that Americans living close to artificial intelligence data centers were paying as much as 267% more than they did 5 years ago for a single month's electric bill. People living in Washington, D.C., Virginia, and Maryland, near a region known as Data Center Alley, have seen some of the sharpest price hikes. In Virginia, data centers now account for 39% of the state's electricity usage. In Oregon, the figure is 33%. By 2025, data center power use is expected to double and will account for 9% of all United States electricity usage. All right, let's move to the business section of this October 17th, 2025 issue of the week. And let's look at a couple of short items in business news at a glance. Nearly 40% of Russia's oil refining capacity remains idle, Russian business newspaper RBC reported, citing data from Ciala, a Russian energy market analyst, which also credited Ukrainian drone attacks for up to 70% of refinery shutdowns. That was first reported in the Washington Post. Next one, headline, liftoff. Turmoil drives gold above $4,000 an ounce. The price of gold topped $4,000 an ounce for the first time recently, said Amol Chubby and Ashish Mukherjee in Reuters. Traditionally seen as a store of value during times of instability, the metal is up 54% this year, outpacing advances in global equity markets and Bitcoin. The rally is being driven by a cocktail of factors, including expectations of interest rate cuts, ongoing political and economic uncertainty, and purchases by central banks. A fear of missing out is also pushing up prices as investors concerned about an AI bubble look for alternatives to stocks. All right, under the headline of making money in the business section, headline, healthcare, a drug price plan with plenty of loopholes. Since he entered politics, President Trump has been obsessed with the belief that pharmaceutical companies are ripping off Americans, said Nicholas Florko in the publication called The Atlantic. His main complaint is that they jack up the price of drugs they sell for less in other countries. But recently, Trump, for the first time, successfully brokered a deal with big pharma giant Pfizer to level the playing field and lower the prices of drugs sold to Medicaid, as well as any new drugs it develops. Pfizer will get a 3-year tariff exemption in exchange, but this is a company that has a history of outmaneuvering Trump's attempts to lower drug costs. And now that Pfizer's CEO, Albert Bourla, has kissed the ring, the drugs industry united front against anything close to Trump's coveted America First pricing has collapsed. It puts other drug makers at a negotiating deficit unlike anything else seen in the Trump era. The deal's real impact is dubious, said Dylan Scott in the publication titled Vox, that's V-O-X. Medicaid already receives federally required discounts on medications that cut prices close to or even lower than what's charged overseas. Plus, Medicaid patients already have little to no cost sharing when they fill a prescription at the pharmacy, so they are unlikely to see any real difference in cost. Americans are not being ripped off by feckless foreigners, said the publication The Economist. Many European government-run health systems buy drugs at the national level on the calculation of the value each drug provides to patients. That value is often low enough that 20% of drugs approved in the U.S. don't reach European markets. Trump cannot force the rest of the world to pay more, and demanding that U.S. drug makers reduce the price gap could make healthcare in America even worse. Trump's other solution to sky-high drug prices is plain comedy, said the Wall Street Journal in an editorial. The man known for Trump-branded watches and sneakers is now telling Americans to go to a new government website dubbed, of course, TrumpRx for their drugs. The plan there is to sell medicines directly to consumers at discount prices, something numerous private businesses such as Mark Cuban's Cost Plus drug company already do. Trump is just using this as a political branding exercise. Direct to consumer is the latest drug industry tactic to avoid patient anger over high drug prices, said David Dayan in The American Prospect. Eli Lilly, Novartis, and yes, even Pfizer have their own DTC website, direct to consumer, that eliminate the middlemen. But the prices at Trump's RX and these other pharma websites are separate and segregated from the prices most patients use, the ones that their insurance companies pay. Drug makers are all too happy to dribble out rebates as long as their prices for the insurers remain. All right, let's move on in the business section to the section called Best Columns. All right, headline, shutdown, a new obstacle to economic growth. The government shutdown has left policymakers and investors flying blind at a precarious time for the U.S. economy, said Lydia DeFillis in the New York Times. October 3rd came and went without the release of the monthly jobs report, which the Bureau of Labor Statistics withheld due to the shutdown. The September inflation report, due to be released on October 15th by the BLS, could have been the next to vanish if the stalemate in Congress continues. Without a clearer picture of rising costs or the labor market, businesses could be even less willing to make decisions about the future. Private jobs data have been gloomy. Numbers collected by ADP recently showed that non-governmental employers shed 32,000 jobs in September, while the outplacement firm Challenger Gray and Christmas found that companies announced hiring plans so far this year were at the lowest level since 2009. The last few times the U.S. government shut down, the economy and financial markets emerged unscathed, said Dakan Hyatt in the publication called Investopedia. In fact, the economy added jobs during the three previous long shutdowns in 1996, 2013, and 2019. But there are reasons to worry this time. Trump's threats to permanently cut federal jobs and projects may only be political bluster, but it could deepen the gloom of already pessimistic consumers. The longer the closure lasts, the worse the outcome for the economy, said Jaron Mitovich and Justin Lehart in the Wall Street Journal. Beyond missed paychecks for the public sector, private businesses like Lockheed Martin that depend on the daily functioning of the government are affected. The 2013 shutdown ultimately cut private sector job growth by about 120,000 jobs, according to an estimate from the Council of Economic Advisers. The travel industry, including hotels and airlines, is also hit hard by the closure of national parks. Don't underestimate the direct economic effects on federal workers either, said The Economist. Furloughing 750,000 federal employees will push employment down and growth down in the short term. And that comes on top of 300,000 workers leaving the federal payroll in December, mostly from deferred resignation packages. One break for federal workers. Despite Trump's talk of making furloughs permanent, a shutdown means HR departments inside most federal agencies would go unfunded, making firing workers hard. Empty offices also bring concern for federal contractors, said Matt Egan in CNN.com, as they typically don't receive back pay when the government reopens. It's a dire issue for low-wage service workers who keep the government buildings operating. That probably is not going to trigger a nationwide recession on its own, said Annie Lowry in the publication called The Atlantic, but it can exacerbate some smaller ones already gathering force. The stock market and tech sector are flourishing, but the housing market and manufacturing industry flail. The farming industry is struggling under the weight of Trump's tariffs and immigration raids. The country's cost of living crisis shows no sign of abating, and tariffs are jacking up the cost of consumer goods. The DC area has already tipped into a slump this year from all the upheaval caused by federal layoffs. The rest of the country could be next. Next article, headline, "Yes, You Can Make Things in the United States." This is written by Natasha Khan in the Wall Street Journal. A Made in America Sharpie is showing the way to make domestic manufacturing, said Natasha Khan. For years, most of Sharpie's colorful array of permanent markers were made in China. But during President Trump's first term, Chris Peterson, then the chief financial officer of Sharpie maker Newell Brands, sought ways to bring the company's Maryville, Tennessee factory up to par with overseas producers. When the marketing department proposed that Sharpie make a new gel pen, Peterson pressed the team to ditch plans to outsource abroad. Keeping production in the U.S. would require an overhaul of the manufacturing process and more. Robots to do an increasing share of the packing. Peterson, however, kept Newell's headcount intact by converting employees to new roles like automation engineering and implementing a career training program to help. It took $2 billion in investment across the company, but the Maryville factory is now making all its pen at 3 to 4 times its previous speed and improving their quality. Lower production and shipping costs have allowed it to offset inflation while avoiding most of the tariffs. Now, 500 million Sharpies are made in the United States every year, and only the felt tip is imported, and that comes from Japan. The last article in the business best columns. Headline, bribing voters with their own money. And this comes from the New York Post editorial. If you thought President Biden's COVID stimulus checks were great, you'll love President Trump's idea that we should have more free handouts disguised as tariff rebates, said the New York Post. Recently, Trump said he's considering $2,000 checks for every American family, a supposed dividend from new import taxes that's really just a way of bribing the voters with their own money. Maybe there is some universe in which the U.S. can afford that, but it's not this one. And once Trump follows Biden's precedent, and we've gone down the road of every new president sending out free money checks, Washington's obscene spending habit becomes even more difficult to break. Trump apparently did not learn from the Biden administration's experience with subsidies and handouts that sent inflation soaring. Now he is alone in this cynical view of how to use bribery to collect votes. New York Governor Kathy Hochul is sending out $400 checks to millions of New Yorkers on the theory that it will help her win re-election next year, even as the state is staring at a multi-billion dollar budget hole. But in Washington especially, any and all found money should go to paying down debts run up in the spending sprees of the last 5 years. And we will end our coverage of the October 17th, 2025 issue of The Week at that point. I need to remind you again that you're listening to a recording provided for the use of the blind and print impaired. Items read on Arizalea are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Again, I'm Nancy Porter, and it has been my pleasure to share The Week magazine with you.